You're about to listen to a Second City Works presentation, brought to you in partnership with WGN Radio. Subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming platform or listen on WGNradio.com. And be sure to share.
The Second City is a world-famous comedy theater, and it got so famous because it has produced generation after generation of comedy superstars. That didn't happen by magic. Second City's improvisational pedagogy fuels great performance, and the same practices that have made stars of everyone from Bill Murray to Tina Fey can be applied for success offstage, at work, at home, and in the world. I'm Kelly Leonard, Vice President of Creative Strategy, Innovation, and Business Development at the Second City. This podcast is about collaborative conversations, discovering connections, and building a better future. This is Getting the Yes And.
We welcome frequent guest Bob Johansson back to the podcast. Bob is a senior fellow at the Institute for the Future, author of more than a dozen books, and advisor to top executives at Microsoft, Walmart, Procter & Gamble, and hundreds more. His latest book is called Navigating the Age of Chaos, A Sense-Making Guide to a Bonnie World That Doesn't Make Sense. It's co-written with Jamé Casho. Thank you. I'm going to start that over. It's co-written with Jamé Casho and Angela Williams. You're going to enjoy the pod. Bob Johansson, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Great to be back with you.
When we last spoke to you, you were working with the VUCA framework, which was developed at the end of the Cold War, and it stands for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. In this book, you introduce the Bonnie framework, which stands for brittle, anxious, nonlinear, and incomprehensible. I think I know the answer to this a little bit, but why the update?
Yeah. So the update was tricky for me and difficult because I'd been using VUCA since 9/11, basically. And I'm not a military guy, but I happened to be at the Army War College in Carlisle the week before 9/11. And I learned this term VUCA. And what is really important as a futurist is if you get your frame right, it draws you toward the future and you can be more future ready. And if you get your frame wrong, you kind of fight the future. And VUCA to me was a really good frame for a really long time. So I was excited about that. But then my colleague, Jamé Casho, created this concept of Bonnie, and I've gradually and actually reluctantly given up on VUCA and moved over to Bonnie because there was an assumption buried in VUCA that it took me a long time to realize. And the assumption was, if only we could find the right data, if only we could find the right expert, we'd actually be able to understand what's going on in the outside world. Bonnie no longer assumes that. We're assuming that there's things going on out there that we just don't understand. And they're very puzzling and very frustrating. And if it turns out there's aspects of the future you do understand, you should get extra credit. But your assumption should be, we're not going to understand this, but we have to decide anyway.
Yeah, this year in particular, I can think of a few moments that really stopped me cold in my tracks. One of them was someone had sent me an LLM, a large language model device, where I uploaded my book, some of my podcast interviews, some papers, and then I asked it to make a podcast about some subject matter that I'd spoken about. And within 2 minutes, there were two people having a full conversation as if they were real human beings about my work and other work, and it was quite good. And I sent it around to people explaining what had just happened, and I terrified them, right? They were like, this is terrifying. And then just the other day, and this is after the latest murder in Minneapolis, I think many of us saw this video that came out, which was Alex Preddy, like maybe kicking in a taillight or whatever. And I had to say to myself, I have no idea if this is real. I don't, you know, it appears to be, there's a media company that says it is, but I don't know that I can actually believe it. So this idea of incomprehensible is true because we're in a place where it is all, it's seemingly impossible to know our facts, our data, And how do we get there?
Yeah, exactly. And the challenge here is that we have to, first of all, frame that and understand that in order to be better prepared. But then we've got to figure out, well, how do you decide anyway? How do you decide what to do in a situation where you're running without anything like what you wish you had? And, you know, when I first started doing the futures stuff in the 1970s, 1980s, there was a classic methodology that executives use called the 80-20 rule. And the, yeah. And the rule was, you're going to have to decide when you have 80% of the information you wish you had. Well, now, Kelly, it's like the 60-40 rule or the 50-50 rule or even the 40-60 rule. We've got less and less authentic or trustable, maybe the better word, trustable data. And yet we still have to decide anyway. And here's where, you know, methods like improv, methods like gaming, things like that come in. So, you know, you and I are better prepared because we're trained in all those things, but it's really humbling, much more so than when I started doing this.
Yeah. I think, you know, the improv stuff, of course, but also comedy, because the one thing that a laugh doesn't lie. So, you know, when we're in the theater and everyone is laughing at the same moment, you're like, all right, that is a data point. There is something that is raw and important. So it's, I'm excited to be where I am at least right now. Okay. Let's go through Bonnie. And so B stands for brittle. Talk to us about brittleness.
So brittleness is a system or a structure or a concept that looks strong on the outside, but it turns out it isn't, that it's vulnerable. And not only is it vulnerable, but when it doesn't fail gracefully. So when it's failing, it tends to shatter. So we're dealing with situations that look strong, but actually aren't. So when the bridge across the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore Harbor, when that was rammed by the cargo ship Dolly, it didn't just collapse, it shattered. And it looked strong. You know, so we've got bridges all around the world now that look strong, but they're actually not. We've got infrastructure that looks strong, but it's actually not. We've got concepts like democracy, for example, that look strong, and we thought they were strong, but maybe they're not as strong as we thought they were. So that notion of brittle is just so important. And what we tried to do in the book is give people a language to describe what they're already experiencing. And, you know, as we talked before in our earlier episodes, the famous William Gibson quote, "The future is already here. It's just unevenly distributed." Well, the Bonnie future is already here, and you're seeing it in parts of the developing world, climate impact areas, lots of places, not as much here in the U.S., not as much in Western Europe, but you're starting to see it. And that brittleness is so deceptive because it actually looks strong.
So, yeah, and I love, I mean, you know, this is a heavy book. It's a good book. It's a heavy book. So a great example you use to explain brittleness in this section is a little bit funny. And it is you title the guano madness. So
yes.
I don't know that people understand how like lucrative guano was.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, this is a Jamais story. So the lead author in the book, Jamais Cacho, he's the best scenario writer I've ever worked with, but he tells the story of guavo, which is the kind of special material made of bird poop, more or less, that was very good as fertilizer, but only had a very limited use. So it turned out to be very popular, and people designed their whole economy around it. They designed for efficiency. But it turned out the whole marketplace shifted, and there were better ways to do that. So the challenge that we have in these situations is, if you design for efficiency, which is what many of our economic systems are designed to do, if you design for efficiency and then a key part becomes missing, then suddenly you're really stuck. So that ended up in literally quite a mess because.
Yeah, because suddenly it wasn't the gravy train. So what you want is some slack in the system, right? That helps you.
You do, and you want to design for resilience. So we flip brittle to bendable, but we don't just say bendable in a wishy-washy sense. We say bendable in a kind of envelope of clarity. So we all, to thrive in this kind of world, you need a powerful clarity story. And here, storytelling is really important. So again, the work you do is so important. You've got to have a great story that says, here's the direction of change we're pursuing in this increasingly chaotic, bonny future. And within that direction of change, then you've got to be very flexible, you know, very resilient within that envelope. So it isn't just wishy-washy like Gumby. It's wishy-washy within that envelope of clarity. What the military, I teach at the Army War College now. They're reading this book. Actually, I've got a session with them next week. They call that commander's intent or mission command. It's not command and control anymore. It's really clarity of direction, flexibility of execution.
Yeah, you know, storytelling, you know, I think has felt soft to people, but it is like improv. It becomes absolutely life and death crucial in these important moments. And we've gone through so much change, all of us, right, in the world we live in, us at Second City under new ownership and changes. And what I know as being someone who's been here for so long, that is incumbent upon me to be able to tell the story of our past as it looks forward to the story of our future, or the story of our future, which comes from the past. I can't live just in one of those. It's this sort of bridge world. And I just found myself in a conversation this morning where it was like, I knew in a moment I would have to talk about, like, this is what this looks like to me, having seen 4 decades of this. And I feel pretty good about where we're at. And I could just see the room's shoulders go down. And I'm like, okay, that's what one needs to do. And so, you know, I will say this, because you're talking about, you know, working with the military. We've been working with policing and hostage negotiators. It's like the tough jobs get it.
they definitely get it.
Yeah, yeah, because they have to.
Yeah, and that's where I think you're right to draw from your history and what we add is the future back perspective. That one of the things that's a big surprise about this is people say, oh, you're in a bonny world. It's so unpredictable. Oh, you can't think about the future. We're so, you know, we're so busy. We're so got so many things going on. But the present is so noisy. But it turns out if you think future back, thinking at least 10 years ahead, it's actually easier to look 10 years ahead. And you don't get an outcome out of that. You get a direction. And the direction is what you need to build into your clarity story.
All right, let's talk about anxious. You write in the book, quote, in many ways, anxiety is the engine of Bonnie. that seems like a bad engine.
It's a bad engine, a badass engine. Yeah, you're definitely right. So anxiety is inherently future oriented. If you look at the psychology of anxiety, it's all playing what if, you know, what if this goes wrong? What if that goes wrong? Anxiety is very future oriented. Depression is very past oriented. Very past oriented. So what you need to do is to honor and engage and listen to that anxiety with empathy, with a kind of practical applied empathy. And it's so tense. I mean, if you're not a little anxious nowadays, you're not paying attention. And the big issue is not whether you're anxious. Everybody's anxious. It's what do you do? What do you do with that? And we quote Robert Rosen's book, Just Enough Anxiety. And you know, this kind of applies in your world too, the improv world. You know, you actually work with anxiety. You know, you don't hide anxiety. You play into anxiety. And getting that balance right of just enough anxiety, that's so important. So what you need in response to that is attentiveness. You've got to be very attentive and listening and kind of honoring what people are experiencing, and then help them engage in that in a way that gives them some agency, gives them some sense of power, gives them some sense of, yeah, I can deal with this. And again, they won't be able to predict, they won't be able to control, but they can be themselves in this kind of climate. They can engage instead of withdraw.
I think the lesson you can sort of take from our world is, one, we're having people develop a practice where, at least for when they are improvising, just mm-hmm. that, they are not in judgment of self and not in judgment of others. They're not operating from their fear or shame brain. And in part, they're able to do that because they're staying fiercely in the moment with the person across from them. However, you can't do that 24 hours a day.
No.
You know, this is a 3-hour class. This is a 60-minute performance. It's just too taxing cognitively.
Exactly.
But that balance is right, right? I mean, you do want to take some moments where you have a certain kind of attention that is on your partner that is intentional. And then you also have to ride through the waves, the fear, the anxiety, all those things. But it's both. And yeah. I think for, you know, just human beings in general, we think, you know, in dyads, we want to be good or it's good as opposed to bad, you know, or it's all bad, it's not good. And it's both things. And if you can come to kind of some terms with that, I think you sense make your way through this thing.
Yeah, you definitely do. And it really links back to one of my earlier books, Full Spectrum Thinking. What you want to do is get beyond those kind of bimodal categories or either or thinking to what's the future, what's the options across a spectrum of possibilities, and resist those categories of the past, resist those kind of simplistic labeling. But so much of what happens in a Bonnie future is that people get so confused that they polarize. You know, they pick sides and they say, oh, I'm going to go with this against that. And it becomes suddenly an either or world.
All right. N is nonlinear. And I mean, you talk about social media inside this, which is the amplifier of all amplifiers. I can't imagine that we didn't have nonlinear before.
Sure.
So what existed before then is it the amplification that is why it ends up as part of this, you know, spectrum?
You know, it's nonlinear because traditional problem solving doesn't work as well anymore. And we touched on this earlier around efficiency. You know, Drucker said efficiency is doing things right. Effectiveness is doing the right things. And so much of our economic system was designed around doing things right. It was a linear chain. That's why they call it a supply chain. And in terms of framing, I always advise supply chain people, don't call it a chain, call it a web. It's a supply web. So we've designed ourselves around linear problem solving. We've rewarded executives who make quick decisions and sort of decide and run. And it just doesn't work in an increasingly chaotic world, whatever you call it, a Bonnie world or a VUCA world. It doesn't work when you're dealing with systems that don't behave in the way that you expect them to behave. There's not that linear sequence. So essentially what we have to do in this world is to teach our brains new tricks. We got to teach them. And here's where improv comes in. The lucky thing is that we've got this great history of improv, which you guys have led the way on, this yeah. great history of improv, comedy improv, theatrical, conflict resolution improv, the yes and stuff. We've got mm-hmm. so many methods. So what we find, I work nowadays mostly with CEOs and senior executive teams. Most of them, while they're working with me and working with Strategic Foresight, they're also taking refreshing courses or refresher courses in improv, because yeah. improv is the closest thing to how we need to deal with these things. But it's improv, again, within a clarity story.
Yeah. I was going to mention to you that because you talk about scenarios.
Yes.
I don't know if you and I discussed this, but the predecessor to Second City was the Compass Players. It was the first improv
yes.
theater
yes.
in America. They didn't call it improv. They called it scenarios.
Interesting. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And you know, the term scenario planning in my world, in the futures world, that started with Herman Kahn, who is the mm-hmm. RAND researcher who wrote the amazing book called Thinking the Unthinkable. thinking the unthinkable. And that's what scenario planning, it was all scenario planning to prepare for nuclear attack. That was the unthinkable. But Herman Kahn was at RAND at the same time my group, the Institute for the Future, spun off of RAND. Herman Kahn spun off and created something called the Hudson Institute. Yeah. And both of them pursued scenario planning.
We'll talk more about that, but the I is incomprehensible. One thing that when I got in this section, I'm like, you have to mention this. You did this anti-vax movement in this country, incomprehensible to me and to you, right? So let's talk more about that, and you can use that example or other examples.
Yeah. So you know the text term or social media term, WTF, it just applies so much here. I mean, you run into things in this world that you just say, what's going on here? I just don't get it. I just don't get it. There's stuff that's just downright weird. And the beginning of thriving in a Bonnie future is to accept that there will be things that you just don't understand. They're, and maybe nobody understands them. And we tell the story in the book about black swans, and you know that kind of pop futures book about black swans, and how black swans were what professional futurists call wild cards. You know, lower uncertain probability events that if they did occur would have a big impact. You know, black swans, it turns out, black swans actually existed, but you had to go to the Aboriginal people in Australia to find out about them. And there weren't very many of them, but they actually existed. So it was really a question not of something that was new and not understandable. It was that they hadn't asked the right people. So the flip for this is you got to be interconnected. And the whole notion of expertise is now up for grabs. And we have to be asking ourselves, who are the experts at understanding this virtual world, this uncertain, this incomprehensible world? And they're probably not the experts that were good at understanding that old linear problem-solving world.
So this is that problem, though, with expertise, which is, you know, a thing I figured out as I've gotten older is I'm probably wrong and I don't know. and that doesn't make me not an expert in my field, but my field is narrow. And I think that's where this all breaks down, because when we lose all expertise, there's just it's the chaos that you're fighting against. But I also get it, because we're right to distrust a lot of if you just look at the facts, ma'am, like what history shows us is that we were wrong. So it does take a little bit of mental jiu-jitsu, I think, for anyone to hold that thought in their mind and then also be like, yeah, but I have to have some level of North Star to even move this thing forward.
It's very hard. And the notion of holding things simultaneously and still functioning, that's a very old idea. We referred to that as dilemma flipping, you know, where you deal with problems you can't solve, they don't go away, but you need to hold opposing ideas at the same time. It's what Roger Martin, the great strategist, calls the opposable mind. You know, the ability to hold those opposing thoughts in your mind and still decide anyway.
Yeah. So in your, and I like that improv shows up in the book, I mean, throughout, but primarily in chapter 8 around neuroflexibility, and you call it practical improvisation. Another thing I like in our ventures in this area, we're like, do we call it wise improvisation? It's not just improvisation. It's improvisation, you know, towards an intent. You write, quote, theater improvisation techniques offer a powerful set of tools for fostering neuroflexibility that can improve your ability to thrive in a nonlinear world. In theatrical improv, people engage in unscripted scenes and are taught to respond spontaneously to fellow actors in real time, end quote. This is the thing over and over we've discovered, as you and I have talked about, which is the more and more of the people showing up to improv classes here are not looking to get on a stage or go to Saturday Night Live. That's not why they're here.
Right.
They're here to try to make sense of something that is broken in their world.
Yes.
And it might be a relationship. It might be a job. It might be the state of the world. And, you know, maybe they're not even sure if it's the improv that's doing it or the fact that they're away from their phone for 3 hours. I would suggest it's probably all of those things.
Yes.
But one thing I think at the end of the day is, you know, you are where you put your attention. And if you are putting your attention intently on another human in terms of building relationship and ideas, and this idea that you talk about in sort of bendable worlds, you need lots of different ideas and opinions from other sources to get to the things that are true. Even if it's six people in a room, you know, those other people are not, they're not from your life. So they're going to hand you some gifts, and you should be prepared to accept those gifts.
That's right. That's right. And then you also have to realize that what you pay attention to, you amplify.
Yeah.
And that can be good or bad. So if you go back to anxiety, if you pay attention to your anxiety, you're going to amplify it. So you've got to do something with that amplified anxiety. And here, to come back to social media, which we refer to often, because many nonlinear things, many incomprehensible things happen through social media. Here's where I have to admit I was wrong as a futurist. I was one of the early social media practitioners. I started using social media in the 1970s, you know, so I grew up with it before it was called social media. And I thought it was going to be something that brought us together. It really was an ugly surprise for me that it ends up amplifying anxiety. And in a real sense, the more we're connected, the more we're apart in that kind of world. It just hasn't played out. It's been much more complex and much more negative than I expected.
So Nir Eyal, in one of his books, sort of said it's not a superpower unless it can also be used for evil.
Yeah,
isn't that the case with social media?
It is.
Because
it could
have gone the other way, and Arab Spring and other things, it kind of did. But the incentives for the people who have the money associated, and they understand that rage sells. That's the problem.
It is an anxiety cells too.
Yeah.
So those are big pieces of it. I still think there's an underlying forecast that anything that can be distributed will be distributed. It's just going to take longer than what I thought and what others thought. These media are inherently not just decentralized, they're distributed. But right now, they've kind of taken this kind of weird step where very large companies are controlling the access to it. But the medium itself, ultimately, it's going to get increasingly distributed. And you can say this about AI, too, that right now it's centralized, but that increasingly anything that can be distributed will be distributed. And I think that's a good thing, that ultimately that's going to be more democratic and less authoritarian, in the sense it's going to be harder to control.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that the point of blockchain? Right.
It is. It is. Mm-hmm. It is. But, you know, blockchain got kind of spun off with, you know, Bitcoin and cyber gambling, basically.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It did. We talked a bit about scenarios, and I thought this was interesting. The idea that scenarios should not advocate for or against something, but also that a too close adherence to neutrality can result in, and you note this, it's a philosopher, Thomas Nagel, who called the view from nowhere.
Right.
I love that. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
And that is the thing of, like, to put it in sort of like, I don't know, other terms, like if you're so fair that you're seeing nothing, that's a problem.
Yeah, no, it really is. And you know, one of the basic insights about this is that all models are wrong. It's just that some models are wrong in an interesting way. So, you know, so you got to assume that no model is pure, no scenario is pure, no game is pure. But some of them are really usefully wrong.
Yeah.
And I think as futurists, that's kind of how I see myself as a humble futurist. And to me, that's a humble way to say what we do. We're usefully wrong.
Yeah. And also that honestly, for our work, that's what's funny.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
because you're expecting this is going to make sense. They're like, oh, it didn't. It was never going to make sense. Okay. That's really funny.
Right.
And then you move to the next thing because you need that. You need that release in order to keep going, because you mentioned this in the book over and over again. It's like, we can't let this stop us from moving forward.
That's right. And you know, that's where you come back to, you want to be clear. You might be very clear where you're going, but you can't be certain. So the part that is consistent from VUCA to Bonnie is both the VUCA world and the Bonnie world. They reward clarity, you know, clarity of direction, but they punish certainty. But Bonnie is a little more shaky on that because it often rewards certainty in the short run. It's just certainty won't be sustainable.
Yeah. All right. In a moment, I'm going to ask you for a thank you because story, but two more things I want to talk to you about before we jump to that. You talk about, and I want to see if I get his name right, Dr. Nasser Gyami.
Yeah.
Who wrote a book about the link between leadership and mental illness and talks about this idea around depressive realism.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's so fascinating. This is one of my favorite books ever, and we should put it in the notes because it's not a very well known book. But his idea is that sanity may not be all it's cracked up to be. that you know, sane people may not do as well in a Bonnie world because they don't understand kind of the weirdness that's at play, and he goes through a whole series of people. And Churchill was an example, and he kind of compares Churchill and Chamberlain. Chamberlain was much more healthy psychologically than Churchill, but Churchill was much more able to deal with Hitler than Chamberlain. And that's part of the point, is that what we define as mental health is going to change, and it's really important in our book. I think you're right; it is a heavy book. But the first four chapters are heavy. The rest of the book is positive, and it's all about how to flip it positive. And we draw on the work from Judith Moskowitz at Northwestern, where Judith reviewed all the psychological coping techniques that are coming out of healthcare now for unsolvable healthcare problems, like having a partner with dementia or a terminal cancer diagnosis, where you're not going to solve the problem, but you can at least figure out how to be at least somewhat joyful or somewhat surviving beyond just surviving to thriving. So we built on those methods and we brought that in to a future back perspective. And I think it's really important to realize that in a Bonnie future, we have to rethink what is mental health, you know, what is the concept of being healthy. And we've got to teach our brains new tricks. And here gaming and improv and other things help us teach our brains new tricks about how to not only cope but thrive in this Bonnie kind of world. If you look back in history, I think we have some lessons around this, but now it's up to all of us. We've got to each figure out how to be crazy in an interesting way or crazy in a useful way.
Yeah, we've been working with a partner on some trainings for neurodivergent places.
Yeah.
And kind of taking the Martin Seligman approach, like with positive psychology, like let's look at this as the advantage that it is.
Yeah.
And we know this because it's like, you know, it's not like we're testing people at Second City, but believe me, this is like land of people on the spectrum.
Oh, I think so.
Of course it is, because they see the world just a little bit different, and you need that in order to have it reflected in a way that's interesting for you, which means it's automatically different. So all that. Okay, one more thing.
You definitely do. And, you know, in Silicon Valley, we've got all kinds of people on the spectrum, including me in some ways. But we're finding now with job applicants, we're getting people who put on their job application that they're on the spectrum. Because you're the institute for the future, for God's sakes. I've got this ability, this superpower. It's really interesting where when I started there, nobody talked about that. Now we've got a language to talk about it. And that's what we're doing with Bonnie, is giving people a language to talk about it and then showing how to flip it positive.
I mentioned this up top, but what is your approach to generative AI, where you sit right now today? We're recording this on February 4th, 2026.
Yeah. So I'm humble about it, but humble in a very interested way. I started a little more than 2 years ago, two books ago, I started using generative AI, and I now have a customized version of ChatGPT 5.0 that I've nicknamed Stretch, because I only use it to stretch my thinking. It runs on a dedicated screen. I talk to it in the early stages. I mostly am going back and forth because I'm a writer. But I use it every day, and it's here with me all the time. And I've found the big insight for me is it only comes to life in conversation. I don't use the word prompts. I think prompts is something that's going to go away, kind of like the nonlinear or the linear. Prompts is kind of an old-fashioned way of dealing with these things. You've got to have long conversations with them to start to derive meaning. So I have conversations with Stretch that go on for hours as I'm writing, but I don't trust Stretch. I don't trust it. So I use it only for divergence. I never cut and paste, for example, or anything like that. And I don't use it at the end of my writing at all. I use it only to stretch my thinking. Now, to go back to Bonnie, it is part of the Bonnie future, because even the developers who we've interviewed, even the developers don't know exactly what's happening. It is rather magical. It's rather alchemy as well as rationality. But I think it's really important. And I think 10 years from now, if I'm going to be writing serious books 10 years from now, I'm going to have to be augmented. And virtually every good author is going to be augmented. The question is how. You know, how are you augmented? And for me, there's a clear distinction between what I write and how Stretch helps me stretch my thinking. So I can see where you can get these things confused, but I'm really interested. Now, the risks are real. So I'm not denying any of the risks, and I'm glad people are exploring those. I'm looking at how it can empower me as a writer. And then I'm working with these senior executive teams for how generative AI can empower senior leadership. The next book I'm working on, which I look forward to talking to you about, is all about faith in the future. You know, what's the role of faith? And I think there's a really interesting role for generative AI to create sacred text. Sacred text, where it's an interactive concept to expand our concept of faith. So it's not rigid belief, but it's helping us develop faith in the future. And I realize that word faith is now controversial. So you can use a word like hope, and that's fine, or trust in the future. But to be a great leader, you've got to have some kind of confidence, some kind of hopefulness, some kind of trust. I would say some kind of faith in the future. And I think these generative systems can help us not just look at faith concepts that are already here, but generate our own that are relevant to the Bonnie future.
When you say you're not so interested in the term prompts, is that because you find that limiting?
Yes. Yeah, this is not a question and answer jukebox. You know, it's not a kind of Google on steroids thing. It really is a conversational medium. And I like the way Dana Boyd says it. She said what these things are really good for is to help you get unstuck.
Yeah.
Unstuck.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what I mean by Stretch. So Stretch has read all my books. It's programmed to write kind of like me. It's programmed to argue with me, but politely, because I don't I don't like rudeness. So I like to have polite arguments with Stretch. But it's very conversational. And I'm now looking into things like different sorts of interfaces beyond just text and voice. And how might we start to get a little more humanoid features without a pretend human?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's great. This is perfect. So we end the podcast. We're return guests asking them for a thank you because story. This idea of when you can't yes and, what do? You don't really agree with a person, but you got to stay in the conversation. And the thank you because allows you to kind of explore gratitude and actually seeing the other person, not as a way to adopt their POV, but as a way to move forward with difference. So yeah. I'm wondering from your own world, what does that bring up?
Yeah, and it's a very thoughtful question. What I find when I talk to people about Bonnie is the first thing is they view it almost in a, I feel like I'm a futurist going into the conversation and I'm a therapist about halfway in, because they're so upset. And I'm dealing with really senior executives too, but they're talking openly about how much anxiety they have and all the various tools. And there's always somebody, when I'm dealing with a group, there's always somebody in the room who says, this isn't new. This is life. You know, this is life. This is life. It's always been this way. Mm-hmm. And there, my first instinct is to say, you know, I'm a professional futurist, and this isn't the same old stuff. There's new stuff here around climate. There's new stuff around AI, and just get into an argument or kind of write them off or kick them out of the room. But instead, what I try to say is thank you for raising that. And there is a sense in which the Bonnie world, is very familiar to us in the fact, in the basic fact that we all have to die at an uncertain time. You know, so that's Bonnie. That's Bonnie. So thanks for headlining that. Now help me explore what might be different. So for example, talk to me about your use of generative AI or how you're using AI, and I can get into a conversation about that. Tell me about your thoughts about climate disruption, about global climate disruption, and the kind of nonlinearity of that. And basically try to get into a conversation with them about what's different from the past uncertainty, the past where certainly we had Bonnie-like or VUCA-like in certain zones, or like war zones, for example. Those were crazy, crazy awful. But we've got personal life things like that too. But what's actually different? So what I try to do as a futurist is, instead of kind of rolling over something like that, to pause and thank them for raising that, even though it's hard for me to do because they're taking me off the line I want to go on.
But what you're also doing is making them be storytellers.
Yeah, yeah, true.
You know, and I think that like that's why I asked the prompt is a term in our world. So you get prompts from the audience to do your work. But our work is in conversation with the audience. So the prompt doesn't end with the prompt. It then, you know, elicits this thing that goes back and forth between audience. And so I like the idea, because we also say about being in conversation with the audience, and you talk about these with conversations. And then what I realize is like, oh, we're doing group storytelling. You gave this, give us this nugget. We're taking it, and you're approving because you're laughing, or you're disapproving because you're not. And that's when we shift courses. Mm-hmm. And so this idea of like the vitalness of storytelling, which you've highlighted over and over again, of course is true because we're awash in data. We've never had so much data. And what we're missing often is like, but what's the story that goes with that data? Because the data alone doesn't cut it.
Yep.
It's not good enough.
Yes, and I'm okay with how you use the word prompt, because you use it in the context of the conversation or the context of the story. There are prompts that are fine to use. What I don't like is a lot of generative AI people, when they talk about it, they don't use the word conversation at all.
No,
they just refer to it as prompts, and we'll help you write better prompt, or even worse, we'll do prompt engineering for you. No, it's the art of conversation, and it takes a long time to learn that. It's just, it's really a different digital tool than I've ever encountered.
The book is called Navigating the Age of Chaos. Bob Johansson, it's always great to have a conversation with you.
You're welcome. And there's a website that we created that's just called the Navigating the Age of Chaos, that has all the has videos of me, of Jaime, and of Angela. Angela, I should say, is the CEO of United Way Worldwide, and she provided us global examples of Bonnie from around the world. And Jaime is the guy who coined the term Bonnie. But we put videos of all of us on the website.
Is that .com or .org?
Let's see. It is .com. It's ageofbonnie.com.
All right. Everyone check it out. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for all you do, Kelly.
Getting DS And is produced by Second City Works and WGN Radio. Our editor is Iridian Fierro from WGN. We get support at the Second City from Emma Smith and Colleen Fahey. For more information about the Second City, you can go to www.secondcity.com, or you can email us directly at works@secondcity.com.